Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a lot of operational changes with no masks or social distancing, some entertainment returns to the streets.
A popular guest activity is available again. We finish our discussion with Joan, the first Peter Pan at Disneyland, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of June 23rd, 2021. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tank Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Devin O for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. The supporter Discord chat has been a source of great Disney magic from our supporters, like theme topic days. We just had a community get-together Zoom meeting last night that went on for quite a while where we talked about a little bit of everything. It was supposed to be some crafting, but we didn't really get to crafting, but that's all right because we just talked about our love of Disney, movie nights, and so much more. If you'd like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, the DL Weekly store is now live. We've got logo stickers, t-shirts, even some hats. We do have four versions of the sticker to choose from. We're pretty excited about those. They are new. We have our watercolor classic logo. We also have the classic in white, the Magic is Back variation, and also our Star Wars Galaxy's Edge version of our logo. These durable stickers are great anywhere, your water bottle, laptop, or even your car window. Head on over to store.dealweekly.net to order some today.
Just a bit of a program note to let you guys know that we are less than a month away from our trip to Disneyland. We will be there starting on the 17th, and we'll be there for 5 days. We are having a meetup on Sunday, July 18th at 1 p.m. at the AMC Theater, like, seating area, the former AMC Theater seating area, which is inside the security perimeter of Downtown Disney. We are doing it outside so people that don't have reservations for the park or tickets for the park can still come and hang out. We might be eating, like, some Earl of Sandwich or something and having lunch time there. So we'll have goodies to give out. Of course, we love to meet as many of you as possible and just share our Disney love with you. So the 18th of July, 1 p.m. At the old AMC like box office area where they're seating now. We hope to see as many of you there as possible.
Yeah, and just note that we are supposed to be in DCA that day, so we won't be downtown Disney for super long. We plan to be there at least an hour. So if you want to come hang out with us, be sure to be there as close to one as you can to make sure that you can come say hi.
Now let's get to the news.
Since June 15th and the drop of the Blueprint for a Safer Economy restrictions in California, what has changed at Disneyland? Well, a lot, but most of it is good news. Indoor queues have returned. Mix that with the removal of social distancing and attractions returning to full capacity at the parks. The parks feel delightfully empty. Dining location capacity has also returned to or at near capacity, which makes finding a place to sit and eat a lot easier. Mobile order availability has been reduced, allowing more standby ordering to happen, easing the strain to get food. Stores have also returned to full capacity, removing the need of one-way entrance and exits of all retail locations. So, of course, they're making shopping much easier, too. So, I'm happy. I can get on and off my attractions quicker. I can follow the Disney winds in my stomach to eat what I want to eat. I don't have to try and, like, order everything with mobile order in the morning. And they're making shopping easier, too.
Yes. So, of course, everybody is very happy that you can now queue indoors.
Yes, that's huge.
Allows a lot of the congestion that was out in the walkways to go away, which makes everything seem way less crowded than it was before. The fact that they are fixing the mixture of mobile order and standby, I think, is great.
Yep.
They said almost all of the outdoor patios have returned to 100% capacity. There is still some indoor dining restriction capacity limits. They haven't returned all the tables and stuff to all the locations at this point. But most of the places that have like an outdoor patio, full availability. They said if you aren't trying to eat at like the peak times, you should easily be able to find a seat, which is great to hear. So I know that a lot of people in our chat and our community were saying that one of the things that they kind of lament from all of this is the social distancing kind of went away. People liked not having other groups of folks on them.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it was a little extra magical to have your own little bubble in the lines. It was nice. It'll be interesting when we go to see what that's like, because the last two times Tag and I were in a park, was Walt Disney World, and then of course for Touch of Disney, and you know, so we've been used to the distancing thing, so it'll be interesting to be in a park without that. I'm still hoping that people, you know, since we're not fully out of this yet, I am still hoping people, other guests, are respectful and won't be as close as we're used to pre-pandemic, because there were times that people would be like accidentally stepping on the back of your shoe because they were that close to you in line, or little kids would be playing and bump into you, which, I mean, totally normal, right? But when you've got 6 feet of distance in between you and the other parties, there weren't people.
If you see me right in a line at Disneyland, watch out for the stink eye, because I'm going to give the stink eye if you get too close. So just stay like a foot or two away from people. I think that's a good distance. Space. Disneyland is a magical place, and part of what makes it so magical is the entertainment around the resort. Well, this week, a couple of those entertainment options returned. The Disneyland Band is marching down Main Street, and the citizens of Buena Vista Street are performing on a stage in front of the Carthay Circle Fountain. No word yet on when the rest of the entertainment, like the Dapper Dans, will return.
This is so exciting, and rumors are already flying as to when people think Fantasmic is going to be returning, or other entertainment like the Pearly Band, and oh yes, the parade, and I was thinking about the at the Coke Corner, the pianist.
Yep.
That would be there's just so many it's one of those things that I've realized now that all of those things have been removed. I kind of feel like maybe we took those for granted, because when they started listing all of the different entertainment things at the park, it's like, oh yeah, you know, we remember the major things like fireworks, parades, Fantasmic, even the Disneyland Band, but things like the Pearly Band, I kind of forgot that was a separate band, you know, just stuff like that. It's there's such a big part of what makes Disneyland so magical, and it's just so exciting to see them all returning.
Well, and that's why you go to Disneyland, right? Because there's all these little extra things that make Disneyland magical. It's not just the attractions, it's not just the food and the shops and the atmosphere. I mean, it is the atmosphere, right?
Yeah,
it's these extra additional things. So, you know, we already have characters back. We've had characters back since the beginning. But having things like the Disneyland Band back, the citizens of Buena Vista Street, all of that, I think is great. Again, you know, I like we said earlier, you know, having something like the Dapper Dans back will be really exciting. The band and stuff. Is it the Pearly Band? Is that the one that plays in New Orleans Square?
No, that's the Pearly Band's the one that's in Fantasyland, and they've got the very brightly colored outfit. So, yeah, you've got the bands over in New Orleans Square, too, that we're waiting for a return on as well.
Yeah, so I'm very excited. Now, to go along with what you said, Teresa, about rumors about Fantasmic, is people have been, technicians have been spotted re-rigging the Columbia for
it. Yeah, so the Columbia is under refurbishment, and some of the things that they're doing is, like Tag said, the rigging, but also the pads that they use to, I don't know,
fall
on. I don't know how to say that, but yeah.
The Tom Sawyer Island or Pirates there on Tom Sawyer Island is closed, but there have been people doing maintenance over there for the areas where they use for that. So definitely, it's obviously going to come at some point.
Right.
My guess is that it won't come probably till August, which will be sad.
I'm a little, it'll be interesting because poor Murphy, right? Murphy's got problems anyways. And, you know, we love her, but she's got some, so I don't know, stage fright or what you want to call it. But so it's with that animatronic being under that stage for that long, I'm wondering how much TLC Murphy is going to need before she is stage ready again. Plus, just think of all the performers that they have to rehire and train and you know,
practice,
so it's not like they can just flip a switch and boom, there it is. So it'll be interesting.
Yep.
It'll be interesting. I wonder, it'll be interesting to see, do we see World of Color return first or Fantasmic? If World of Color
doesn't need, they only need guest control people. They don't need anybody to perform.
But they've got some maintenance-y things going on with the actual
infrastructure,
like, technology part of, you know, like the infrastructure of it. So it'll be interesting to see, do the live performers get trained, like, which is, it's kind of a race, right? Which one's going to come back first? If it were normal and there weren't any issues with World of Color and the fountains and the projections and, you know, all that stuff, obviously World of Color, but it'll just be interesting to see which one comes first.
I
almost think World of Color would make more sense because it's easier to space people.
Maybe.
Keep people a little bit more spaced.
They're not worried about that anymore, though.
Yeah, but I feel like it's Disney, so they're still not going to want you, like, jam-packed in.
Maybe.
I don't know.
That's the problem with Rope Drop. If you go look at pictures from Rope Drop, everybody's, like, crammed in right now. I'm excited because I want the parades to come back because Magic Happens was around for, like, 2 weeks before the parks closed. I was just listening to some Disney music the other day with producer James in the car, and we were listening to the Paint the Night soundtrack, and we were talking about how much we missed that parade. So it'd be cool if they can't get World of Color going, perhaps they should try to get some people trained and bring back Paint the Night for their nighttime entertainment over there, if it's going to be a longer process.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Because, again, with the parades, you've got all those, you know, people to hire and train and all that. It's no easy feat.
No.
Well, for guests like myself that have been waiting for over a year to trade pins, the wait is finally over. Pin trading has returned to most locations in the form of the pin trading boards. Cast member lanyard trades have not returned at this time, but it is expected to return in the not too distant future.
So I know you're very excited about this. Of course, this was one of those COVID things of getting close to people and touching things.
We did do some pin trading when we were in Walt Disney World. It was a very different and modified version of pin trading. You couldn't really, like, you had to stay pretty far back, and, like, if you approached the desk, or because they'd have, like, a table or something that they were standing behind, and if you approached the desk or table, the cast member would then step back to maintain 6 feet. And the pins themselves were kind of far away. They weren't right in front of you, so it was a little difficult to be able to really see them. And then when you did the actual switch, the cast member would take the pin off. You, of course, would keep your back, which is kind of normal. You just switch the pins. And then the pin that you would trade, so the pin that I gave the cast member, did not go onto the board. It went somewhere separately. I think they were trying to, like, disinfect them or something, maybe, in between. So anyway, so it'll be nice because Mice Chat actually reported on this. And I'm such a pin trading nerd that the board that they posted, there was a pin. I'm like, I want that pin. There was a pin that I would have traded for on that board. So I'm very excited to bring my lanyard, bring some pins to trade, and see what we can find.
Well, guests visiting Disney California Adventure will have a much easier time accessing the new Avengers campus. This week, the line to access the new area has dropped from 5-plus hours a day to a line in the morning at opening and being non-existent by as early as 11 a.m. every day.
This is crazy because we were talking about this the week after it opened and, you know, kind of like, oh, it'll level out. I think it'll, you know, it seems fast, though. Like, I'll have to go back and listen to that episode to see what our thoughts were at that point. And I mean, I guess it has been a couple weeks now, but it's crazy to see that it went from a line that was darn near through the entire park to now, just a little bit of a wait. I think that's great, though. Get more people in, experience and see the land. The hype's kind of leveling out a little bit. That gives me hope for our trip.
I'm very happy that we don't have to wait to get into this land because I did not want to waste a bunch of time waiting for this.
And now we have the schedules of when all the different performers and performances are going to be going on too, so we know what time to catch the things we want to see. Well, fans of the new Disney Plus original Loki are in for a treat at Avengers Campus. Well, since the premiere, each week when Loki appears in Avengers Campus, his outfit reflects the ones he was wearing in the show from that week. So far, and I think this was before the show aired, Loki appeared in his Asgardian outfit. And then once the show began, we saw him in his jumpsuit from episode 1. And most recently in his jacket from the Time Variance Authority. We expect to see more changes as the character changes in the show.
This is such a cool, like, synergy.
Oh, so fun.
The fact that...
So fun.
That if you're watching at home and you, like you watch an episode tomorrow, or, well, today, the day this podcast goes, you watch the new episode, then you go to the park the next day, like, he'll be in whatever he's wearing from the episode. Like, that's pretty cool, because then it feels like you're there. It kind of encourages you, if you are going to be in the park, to watch the latest episode, because then you'll know kind of what's going on with him or why he's in an outfit.
Yeah, so Vern and I did not watch the first show right away, because for whatever reason, I had it in my head that they were starting on Fridays, because all the other Disney Plus shows seem to drop on Fridays. So we kind of missed that this one was coming out on Wednesdays. So we didn't watch it until the weekend that it had first come out. So I had actually seen photos of Loki in the park in his jumpsuit before I watched the show. And it definitely made me more interested to see what the heck was going on, because he looked like, right? It looked like a prisoner uniform. Yep. And you're like, what mischief did he get up to now? So I think it's really, really fun to keep the excitement building for the show.
I don't know if we talked about it last week, but I think it's important to know for anybody who does have Disney Plus. So Loki was their highest viewed thing Wednesday. Was their highest premiere. So they're actually moving their Friday premieres to Wednesdays now.
Really?
Yep. So
I have mixed feelings on that.
Yeah,
I
in the future
Fridays.
they'll move it back to Wednesdays, because whatever. So I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I'm glad that they're like trying different things. Personally, right now, what I really like is I like that Loki comes out on Wednesday and the Bad Batch comes out on Friday, because then I don't have to try to like get through three or four different episodes over like the weekend. I don't have to wait as long for a new episode of something I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
So I watch something Friday, and then I wait, and then on Wednesday I watch something, and then again Friday. So I'm not just, like, waiting 7 days for the next new thing. Mm-hmm.
Be interesting if they did things like Marvel releases were on Wednesday, Star Wars releases were on Friday. Like, somehow, because they don't ever have two Star Wars, it doesn't seem.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. They don't ever have two new Star Wars things dropping every week. They don't ever have two new Marvel things. They space them out to, like, same thing with how they don't drop the entire season on there. They're trying to, like, make us savor and enjoy it for longer, because otherwise, if it was all there, everyone would just sit down and watch.
So are you caught up with Loki now?
I am caught up with Loki.
Yeah, me too. I think it's interesting. There's only six episodes to it. I was reading a thing about
it.
There's only six.
Aww.
So whatever's going to happen is going to happen pretty soon. Although,
it has to happen quick.
What I do enjoy about it is the episodes have been longer than, like, let's say, The Mandalorian. Because some of The Mandalorian episodes felt like you blinked and the episode was over.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the Miss Minutes photo op is still in DCA when we're there.
Do you know what her character in Loki reminded me of? It reminded me of Jurassic Park with Mr. DNA.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of that a lot.
There you
so
go.
It appears that the virtual queue test for Indy has been discontinued with the reopening of indoor queues and social distancing relaxation. The attraction, just like the other attractions in the park, has returned to full capacity, making the line move quickly for standby guests.
You know, I'm not surprised by this, and it made sense. I know that a lot of people weren't very happy about it, but it did make sense to a point that they did have the virtual queue, because they were very limited on space, and that's a very popular attraction. Did I understand why you would go into a virtual queue to then be called to then stand in another queue before you could go? I didn't quite understand that part of it, but I understand the need for a virtual queue instead of a physical queue, especially because at that point when they put it out there, we didn't know when restrictions and these guidelines were going to be loosening, and I'm sure Disney knew when they were planning to have the Jungle Cruise finish and reopen. So with having part of the queue in the Jungle Cruise queue for Indy, obviously that wasn't going to work. You couldn't have two queues in the same area. So it made sense. However, I am glad that we can just go check out Indy whenever we feel like it, and that we don't have to have the queue.
I just hope this is still, like, I hope the Fast Pass doesn't return before we get there, because I am excited to spend actual queue time in the Indy queue that has not been that way since Fast Pass has been around.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to actually, like, be able to look at some things in the queue and not feel like I'm holding up everybody else who's rushing through.
What's interesting is I guess I don't know why they do the Indy queue how they do it. If you work at Disneyland and know the answer to this question, I'd love to know. Because the merge point for Fast Pass is still outside.
Yeah.
So all of the cool stuff, you've already merged. Like, it's already one line now. So why do they not let anybody in, like, the caverns and all that stuff? Why do they make you walk past all that stuff and don't have the queue winding through the caverns and, like, where the...
Because there's no third row that Fast Pass people can walk by all those people. Because there's just two. There's walk in, and then there's a path to walk out. It's split in two. Well, but there's no way to bring FastPass people up.
No, no, no. I'm saying they merge you, so why do they keep that gap?
Because there's nowhere to merge later.
You wouldn't need to. You've already merged.
Right.
So why don't they?
But then you're waiting in a line. The point of FastPass is you don't wait.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So if you did that, you would just bypass a little bit of weight in front. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like that now anyways.
There was a time that I remember that they did the merge in that room that you could pull the rope and the guy was in the bottom. And I don't remember how they worked that out because
you
like
had to walk in the,
like through like, the bat like, cave and stuff. There's no way to like split that in half. It's very tight. So I don't know. Maybe they were having people come in the exit or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cause the exit has a big wide walkway, but I think that's for accessibility purposes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, so I went on a rant last night on our little hangout that we did, our community hangout, and we were talking about.
Oh, let me guess, you were complaining about FastPass.
Yeah, I said I hope that, because somebody asked on the hangout when we thought it was coming back, and I said I hope it doesn't.
It will.
So
in some form or another, it will.
So on the Mice Chat article yesterday that I saw that was talking about the band and stuff returning in the bottom. They had comments, and I was interested. Yeah. It was interesting to me. I always read the comments on the Mice Chat articles because sometimes it's interesting to see what people like catch on to and want to like discuss. Mm-hmm. And the big question everybody kept asking, and I haven't looked at it today, but people were asking, when's FastPass coming back, or do we think FastPass is coming back? And people were back and forth about it. The consensus in the comments there was that there would be no more free FastPass, that it's going to be like MaxPass and that's it.
Well, and that's kind of what it is at Disney World. You get like your three free
right,
a day
but those are free. They're saying no free, you have to pay for MaxPass. Now, one of the things that they suggested that could happen, and I would be more okay with this, but I know you are on the opposite side of this than I am, is they could charge for MaxPass, but charge a lot for it. So only like a few people could use it a day instead of like just anybody. It's not like $10 a day. It'd be like $50 a day to add on something.
But then
like that.
I feel like that's not really fair, and you're pricing like families especially are getting.
You could still
up.
Stand in the standby line though.
I know.
And if you have less people, the standby line will move faster.
I never like the thought of paying more money to like skip the line. That just doesn't sit very well with me.
Okay, so why are you okay with like a free fast pass to skip all these people that are waiting?
Because everybody has the opportunity to get that. You just have to choose.
See, I'd rather not. I'd rather just like go stand in line, go on the attraction.
I will say I do miss the fact that we don't have Max Pass because I really love Photo Pass. Really love Photo Pass.
Well, you can buy Photo Pass now.
I know, but I'm sad that it's not like you have to buy it per day.
Sure,
now,
sure.
Instead of just having it with your ticket.
Yeah, no, I agree with Photo Pass, which is funny because I used to not like Photo Pass.
I've become a Photo Pass believer.
Me too. I think it's because they brought the pricing to a good level. Because like when James and I went there, it was like $170 for the week,
and
it was
ridiculous.
Disney
World, wasn't that?
Yes.
Yeah,
but
Walt
it was
Disney World is very expensive for their photo pass.
Yeah.
Compared to ours.
I don't want them to get as bad as Disney World got, where when James and I were waiting in line for Soarin', the guy told us they let five fast pass people in and one standby. Yeah. And that took forever for that line to go through.
Well, and that's
on standby.
That's a very how do I want to say it?
Popular.
It's not a very interesting queue to be in, so
no.
It feels like it takes that much longer.
Well, plus, even at Disneyland, Soarin', like you've got the two auditoriums that you're loading, and each of those shows is like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit of line movement, and then let's say every 2.5 minutes. Otherwise, you're just standing there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyway, I'm sure that we can get some people sending in feedback, but I personally think that they should just go back to standby queues. That's just my opinion.
I just if they have FastPass, I don't like your thought process of super expensive because I feel like it's really expensive, right? It's expensive to buy your ticket, so then you have to pay even more, and it's just does it end then? You know.
So the other thing we talked about that actually everybody seemed to really like the idea of, but Disney will never do, is. They should go back to ticket books, get rid of FastPass, lower the entrance price.
Yeah.
Kate liked this because her daughter doesn't ride a lot of stuff. They only stay kind of like in Fantasyland. So she said if she could pay $30 per ticket to get into the park, just to get in, and then you could buy ticket books like ABC ticket, whatever, to go like just to the attractions you're interested in, like in Fantasyland, that becomes more affordable for families. Because then you're not, with your ticket, you're not subsidizing, I guess, the bigger rides that you're not actually doing anything with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But then I feel like, then you've got the issue of, like, so what's to, how do I want to say this? Crowds. I feel like crowds would become an issue then, because it means something and it, like, costs something to go on an attraction. So you're going to have less people probably in queues and more people just kind of enjoying the area. Does that make sense?
Well, you still have capacity limits for the park.
Yeah.
You could still do a park reservation system.
More people out, not in queues.
Yeah, but then Disney should like it, because then what those people are doing is they're probably buying merchandise and eating.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the news.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I like the idea of these things. And I know, in fact, when we had the conversation last night, I said, I know Teresa's on the total opposite end of this for me, because you like FastPass. Like, you like utilizing FastPass, where I just think that there's too many negatives for me.
I think it's a nice mix. And it's, you may as well utilize it if it's there. If it's not there, then that's fine. Like, I won't, it's not, yeah, no.
If they got rid of it, you wouldn't be, like, upset?
No, I wouldn't be upset. I just don't think they will. No, yeah.
Because my understanding was that you really liked it.
No. I could take it or leave it as far as, but how do I want to say this? If there's a world that FastPass exists, then I'm going to figure it out and, like,
use it.
Maximize it and use it to, like, the best I can. If it doesn't exist, that's
fine.
So
you're like Thompson, maximize your time in the parks?
Yes. Yes. I will say that I do very much like having the wait times on my app, though.
Oh, yeah.
That really helps with planning stuff out. So that has nothing to do with FastPass per se, but that's the one thing that I really would be upset if they got rid of, which they're not going to get rid of that either.
No. And I think that's like a good quality of life thing for guests to have that in there.
Well, and it's easier for the cast member, too, because then they're not constantly being asked, well, what's the wait over at Alice in Wonderland?
It sets expectations, right? Because, I mean, you remember when we used to work in retail together, one of the things you learned through training was, you're supposed to say hi to the next customer in line, because that, like, resets their, like, weird internal clock, mm-hmm. and then they don't feel like they've been waiting as long. So that's kind of what, like, the wait times is they can give you a wait time. Let's say it's a half an hour. And if they get you in 20 minutes, then you feel really good. You're like, that moved really quick, mm-hmm. even though it's like you still were in line 20 minutes. Sorry for the total offshoot, but I think it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation.
You know, this is a very interesting conversation, and I feel like we'll have a better grasp at what the real plan for the parks is going to be once they announce the replacement program for the annual pass program. They have been saying, like, it's a membership type thing. Mm-hmm. They've been very careful not to say the word annual pass again.
Yeah.
And they've said it's like a membership program. So I feel like that might give us a little glimpse as to what the overall plan will be for the parks. Because, right, that'd be a great time to introduce, I don't think this will happen, but that'd be a great time to introduce lower gate prices and ticket books back.
Sure.
Or, you know, whatever.
Or something, yeah. If they're going to make any changes.
If they're going to change how FastPass and MaxPass worked and all that stuff. I feel like all of those changes will be revealed with the new annual pass-like program.
Now, I want your opinion on this. So, we talked about this last night as well with the annual pass thing. Is how do you feel if they didn't bring back an annual pass, but instead, if they offered you, let's say, like a 10-day park hopper that you had to use within 365 days, let's say, that within you can use those 10 days over the course of the year. You didn't have to use them by 14 days later or something. So you paid more than you would for, like, a pass, let's say, but less than if you had to buy a ticket for every time, and then it got rid of that 14-day window. Because right now, if you buy a 5-day park hopper, the first day you use it, you have 14 days to finish it.
Yeah, I know.
So
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the program is. I don't know if it'll be that or.
Because honestly, what I'm thinking is Disney's looking at it right now, and there's a lot of people paying full price to go, like people that were annual pass holders. So they're kind of like, well, why do we need an annual pass program? People will still pay to come.
And I think that it's actually doing some nice things to the park right now, because I was an annual pass holder. If I could have been there every single day since they opened, Darn right it would have been every single day since they opened. And all the annual pass holders would have said, you know, that's why you have an annual pass. You just love, 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 love Disneyland. So it's kind of nice to for crowd levels and sure. like capacity and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of nice to have. It's kind of filtering itself. But it'll be interesting just in the future to see how having the reservations will kind of what that'll do long term to crowd levels. Is that a short term fix or is it going to be a long term fix? For crowd levels and same thing with, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I think if they did something like with the Flex Pass where you get so many.
I think that would be fine. And we were talking about this pre-pandemic when the Flex Pass first came out. You know, we really thought that was the route that they were going to take, which. It seems like that's really the route that they would have to take if they offer the same type sure. of pass. But who knows? They could do anything right now because they could change it however they wanted. Blank slate. This September, Gay Days is returning to the resort. From September 17th through the 19th, the unofficial event will bring a sea of red t-shirt wearing members and allies of the LGBTQ++ community. Previously, the event took place the first weekend in October. A schedule hasn't been posted yet, but we, of course, will have the Gay Days official link in our show notes.
Yeah. So this is kind of strange because, you know, this used to happen in October. It was mm-hmm. always the first weekend in October. You know, an unofficial event, just like, you know, Bats Day was yep. and Dapper Days and everything yep. like that. This is really cool that this is coming back because I know that a lot of people of the community really enjoy going and mm-hmm. meeting up with their friends and other people, you know, allies and everything. And it's one of the, you know, Disney's really great anyway. Like, you know, people in the LGBT community, I don't think have any problem generally being around in Disneyland and not feeling comfortable because I've seen numerous same-sex couples holding hands and walking around. Nobody gives them any attention. Mm-hmm. But during Gay Days, it's really cool because everybody who kind of supports it or is an ally or is a member of the community wears a red shirt. That's kind of like the thing. And so it's cool to, like, you can see how many people are there supporting yeah. and you can just feel that much more comfortable. So, like, I don't know. I went to Gay Days, I think, twice, and I had a great time both times. And I thought that just seeing everybody like being themselves and like being more free to be themselves was just really nice.
So we actually just looked up because I was wondering, you know, why the date change? Why was it always October, now moved to September? And actually, on the Gay Days Anaheim official website, they address this and they explain that basically as the years have gone by, you know, of course, the parks are promoting Halloween time and basically the Halloween holiday, and because that's such a popular time at the resort, you know, the crowds have been growing and growing and growing, and so October actually quickly became one of Disney's busiest months, whereas when Gay Days started back in 1998, October was one of the quieter months. So they had kind of had a total flip there. So Disney actually had approached the organizers of Gay Days and asked if it would be possible to shift to September so that the in-park experience would be better for the guests coming for Gay Days, so they weren't kind of having competing things and high crowd levels to make, you know, which is great. I think that's a smart move for both Gay Days and for Disney because both very fun, very exciting things, but it's what's not very fun and very exciting is a full capacity park.
No.
Especially now that we've gotten a taste of what not full capacity, you know, very partial and little capacity in, you know, it's a retrospect. What, you know, because, right, it's what, 35% now? So it's good. I would think it'd be very difficult to be going to the park, especially this year, at yeah. like the lower capacity to then boom, like max out all of a sudden. So that would be, I can understand. Makes total sense. I think that was a smart move.
Yeah, I think so too. The limited presentation of Rise of the Resistance that has been utilized since Disneyland reopened has been discontinued and the original flow has returned. Guests progressing through the attraction previously skipped the pre-show to keep under the limitations from the state to keep indoor attractions under 15 minutes. With the limitation dropped, the full pre-show is back.
I know you're super excited about this.
I am very excited. I am hoping that we are there, that we can get a boarding group for this, and I'm hoping that it is smooth sailing. In fact, I've heard,
was it
last week? I think last week, they hit the record for the amount of boarding groups that they've been able to get through in a day, and I think it was like 300 and something.
It was
so,
like 355 or something. Yeah. It was crazy.
So I'm hoping that that stays. I'm hoping that that means the attraction has been operating really well, mm-hmm. Because I know like in Disney World, they were having some breakdown issues and stuff. So we were there in August, which was like a month and a half after Disney World opened. Or reopened,
well, and
so.
The week before we went there, like lightning had struck the show building or something too, which caused some problems.
So let's just hope that when we're there, everything will be great.
I think it'll be a much different experience. The one big thing is the divider won't be there. They put the dividers up. I mean, we got to experience it, which I still think is pretty cool in our own vehicle. So we got to experience the ride just with us and not with a full thing. So it was really like we were in it, because I don't think either you or I talked during the entire time, because we were just so like,
no, I don't
wow.
think so.
You know, so it was really immersive.
Because there'll be four of us.
Yep.
So, and I don't think they're doing single rider stuff yet.
I don't know if you can help yourself to like not point stuff out to James, though.
We've watched videos.
Hands.
Like, it'll be fine.
Oh.
Maybe you sit up with James and I'll sit back with Vern, or Vern and James can sit in front of us and we can sit
there.
Back.
We'll put the first timers in the front together.
There you go. I was telling James today when we were on our walk, I said, I am so excited to go to Galaxy's Edge with you, because I know you're going to like nerd out about all the Disneyland or all the Star Wars stuff. So I'm excited for him to go to Oga's. I'm excited. He was looking at the menu for Oga's and was like, some of this stuff looks really good.
The Force is strong with coffee lovers in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. A new cold brew coffee topped with sweet cream cheese and chocolate puffs has arrived at Docking Bay 7. The drink is topped with cocoa puffs, adding an interesting texture and flavor to the drink. The beverage, however, is only available for lunch and dinner, and for whatever reason is not available for breakfast. This, like, I'm very upset about this.
You were telling me earlier that you were
so
very
excited because I usually always get a coffee at, the Starbucks on Main Street, or the Starbucks just as you enter DCA. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. I always grab a Starbucks and start my day. So I was like, ooh, we could start the day with Batu coffee. That'd be exciting and fun. But no, I have to either have a midday pick-me-up, or I'm having a late night, so I need a little extra jet fuel to get me through. I don't know. So I think it's interesting that it's not a breakfast thing.
I don't know. I think it could be interesting. The idea of like a coffee drink with like the sweet cream cheese and like the cocoa puffs on top seems like an interesting combination.
The cocoa puffs are purely there for fun, I would think. This, like a cold brew coffee with sweet cream is
this coffee sounds right up your alley, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm excited.
Well, hopefully it's there. A favorite unique set of items have returned to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. The detonator Coke bottles have been restocked, replacing the plain Coke bottles that were available when the parks reopened.
You know, it was kind of sad and like a little strange to have these not be at Galaxy's Edge, because mm-hmm. they were very cool. Super, super cool. I know you bought one just to bring it home. You didn't even drink it.
No. Well, I don't like Coke. I don't like cola. It's not even a Coke thing. I didn't buy a Sprite one because I thought the Coke one looked the coolest. But I also don't think I'll buy another one just because, like, I feel like they're really expensive, because I feel like you get less drink in the bottle, and I think it's more expensive than normal drink.
Yeah, I don't know what the ounces are on it, so I guess I don't know that for sure.
But, I mean, it is pretty dang cool.
They are really neat. They're super neat. And I think the only place you can get them is Galaxy's Edge, so that makes them even more cool. There aren't too many discounts to be had at the resort at this time, unless you would like a great deal on accommodations at Disney hotels. Visitors who book by September 16th can save up to 25% at Disney's Grand Californian Hotel and Spa, and up to 20% at the Disneyland Hotel for travel July 5th through October 2nd, 2021.
I mean, that's basically like summer, or, mm-hmm. you know, so
well, they like rarely do deals over summer, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, of course, you can contact our friends over at Concierge. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that they can hook you up with this deal if you're interested.
Yes.
Otherwise, I mean, 25%, that's a pretty big discount.
That is. That's a great, especially with the pricing on those rooms, 25% is, quite a lot.
And if you've already booked your hotel prior to this, and it is during that time, you can contact them and they will give you the discounted rate.
Wow.
Fans of being chosen to carry the magical red cards Rejoice, the red cards that the cast members give out in attraction queues to determine the accurate wait times for attractions, are back in circulation.
Such a small thing, but it's so exciting.
I feel like you wouldn't have put this in the news, but I put it in there because I was like, this is one of those really nerdy things. Producer James loves this red card thing. He loves getting one and, like, taking it up. I don't know. It's just a weird thing.
See,
I've seen people with T-shirts printed red card things on them. Yes.
I'm a fan. So it was actually for Tinkerbell. When we went to go visit Tinkerbell, instead of a red card, they did something in theme, which I thought was great. They just took a leaf, like, that, I don't know, fell off a tree or something.
Oh.
And wrote on their fairy friend. And so they gave it to my cousin's little girl and said, we have a special message that we'd like for you to bring or take to Tinkerbell when you see her. And it was their version of the red card. And I thought that was great that it was like in theme instead of just the, you know, card
red
and a lanyard. Yeah, red card and a lanyard. So, like, I don't know, you could do like some sort of like pirate coin or something for pirates.
Oh,
and
sure.
You could do, you know, they could have a ton of fun with this if they, yeah.
I think the problem is that people like take those things.
Yeah, that's true.
Like a leaf, it's like big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the red cards, I think people.
She felt so special. Like, she felt so special and she was so excited about it. I took a picture even with it.
That's awesome.
Very, very fun, very magical.
It's almost like, you know, we've talked about a lot of times with like the custodial cast members like drawing characters in the water. It's like something so small, but people love it.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Psst. Avast there. It'd be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be trivia questions lurking in every cove, waiting to be answered. Listen close and keep your ruddy Disney knowledge handy. That'd be the best way to answer correctly. You come seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
And welcome to Trivia Land with producer Vern, where we're going to have four questions tonight, plus a bonus question. We're, again, going through cleaning up some of the old trivia questions from before we had the listener-submitted questions, and we'll also be using some listener-submitted questions tonight. Let's get right to it. For our first question tonight, or today, whenever you're listening to this, listeners at home, our first question is from listener Matthew J., for most of its history, Disneyland Park has had a rocket spinner attraction. By what four names has this style attraction been known?
Rocket Jets was the one in the 80s. The Astro Orbiters now.
What was the one that was up on the platform?
That was the Rocket Jets.
It's had four names, you say?
That's what I said.
Oh, man.
So Astro Orbiter, Rocket Jets.
What was it originally? Because originally it was on the, was it on the ground and then they moved it, or was it up and then they moved it back down?
I think they've always had it on the, on something. No, because they had one that was on the ground when Disneyland opened.
Yeah.
That's the only two I know. So I'm already at 50%.
Astro Orbiter, and you said the rocket ships?
Rocket Jets.
Jets. Rocket to the Moon was a different attraction.
Rocket to the Moon.
I'm trying to think of like other.
I think
other,
was the attraction.
It was like the indoor attraction, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. I feel like it should be pretty easy, like Rocket to Space or Blast Off to Space or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like shocked that there's four different names. We will have to wait to find out for the answers because we definitely didn't give you all four.
No, not at all.
Is so that your final answer?
No, we're not. Not starting off well at all.
So we've got Rocket Jets and Astro Orbiter, and that's your final answers?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Question number two, submitted by listener Chris M. What's the name of the highest hill you traveled over on Skyway Buckets? Hint, it's where Matterhorn is today.
Oh, what was that?
Holiday Hill.
Yeah, Holiday Hill.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Yes.
Question number three. What three characters could you meet at the Star Wars launch bay?
Ooh,
Chewie.
Chewbacca.
Vader.
Vader. And
I thought you could meet, like, couldn't you meet Kylo Ren for a while in
there?
You
could meet, yeah, that's what I was just going to ask. When was this question? Because Rey, you could meet Rey in there.
That's true.
You could meet, yeah, Kylo. I've also seen, oh my gosh, what are they called? The sand people or whatever that walk, like, in the brown hooded whatever.
Oh, the sand people. It's literally what they're called.
Okay. I don't know. I've seen,
Tusken Raiders.
Tusken Raiders.
Thank you.
I've seen
the slang term was that.
No. Are the Raiders
one could argue
the
that's a racist
like...
term.
Huh?
Some could argue that's a racist term to just call them sand people.
But are the sand maybe I'm not thinking the right, who are the ones that are the like scavengers?
Jawas?
Jawas. Maybe it was a Jawa that I saw. Yeah.
I feel like I'm forgetting like a really obvious one and I don't remember I don't know.
It's not our like you can't meet R2-D2.
It wasn't like Leia or Luke
it's
or anybody.
Not, yep, and it's not like C-3PO.
Yeah.
It's not Yoda.
Hmm.
These would be pretty cool meet and greets, though. But I've met Chewbacca.
Was it Boba Fett?
I don't know. I've met Chewbacca, and I have met Rey. And I know that you could have met Darth Vader for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think who would have been there pre...
Teresa, keep in mind you met Rey at Disney World.
Oh.
I'm guessing that all of the the sequel stuff is now just... let's just keep it to...
Yeah.
So, Chewbacca Vader.
And Vader, for sure.
Oh, I'm going to kick myself when the answer comes.
So, you go in with Chewbacca and Vader, final answers?
Yeah. I will throw in...
Boba Fett?
Boba Fett. Because he'd be one. Maybe a storm? No. Wouldn't be a storm. Like, who would want a picture of the stormtrooper?
I've seen Phasma wandering around in Disneyland.
That's true. Phasma did do the like March of the First Order in Tomorrowland. Yep. But I don't know if that was a meet and greet.
But the question was, could you meet at Star Wars Launch Bay?
Yeah.
All right. Final answers.
Yeah.
Man, we're doing terrible.
And for your fourth regular question, submitted by listener Lee S., why is the Carnation Cafe often identified as Walt Disney's favorite restaurant, and why is it impossible for that to be true?
Well, it's impossible for that to be true because it wasn't open
when Walt
was there. And I think a lot of people say that it was Walt's favorite restaurant because it has
is that where
Walt's
chili?
Yeah. And there's a lot of classic Walt dishes, specifically the chili that's on the menu.
Yeah. Plus, it's on Main Street, so I think people think that things have been on Main Street have been there forever.
Yeah.
Final answers?
Yep.
Final.
Too bad we don't have the ability to, phone a friend or something.
For what, the Star Wars questions?
No, I'm just saying, in general, for trivia, it'd be kind of cool, call up a weekly tier or something, and, who wants to be a millionaire,
Lifelines, yeah.
Yeah.
And for your bonus for tonight... Adventureland wasn't the original name the land was envisioned to have. What was it originally developed to be?
It was based on his True Life Adventure series, and that's why they did the Jungle Cruise. And the Jungle Cruise was originally supposed to have live animals, but I don't remember what the name of the land was supposed to be originally.
Maybe it was just supposed to be True Life Adventure Land.
Or just,
True Life Adventure Land.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to say True Life Adventureland, even though that's kind of...
I'm going to say just True Life Adventure.
Okay.
And you're leaving off land?
Yes.
And are those your final answers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stay tuned until after the discussion topic to find out.
I can't imagine Adventureland being anything but... how else would you classify that area? Except for adventure, that's a very,
They haven't really come up with new lands, have they? Since, so Mickey's Toontown isn't
land,
a land.
Yeah.
Cars Galaxy's
Land.
Edge. Yeah, but Cars Land's kind of clunky sounding.
Yeah.
Star Wars Land,
Sure.
I don't know. This week for our discussion topic, we will complete our interview that we started last week with Joan, who was the first friend with Peter Pan. Once again, there are some not safe for magic spoilers in this episode. So if you would like to avoid that, you can either listen with caution or just skip to next week's episode if you're interested in that. So please enjoy our conclusion of our interview with Joan.
I had a little boy that kept following me all the time. And I took him on the ride and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, I went back through the gate when the day was over. And it happened to be my birthday, and they had a birthday cake with a Tinkerbell on it. And this little boy who's been following me all day followed me back behind the gate. And he came up to where they were having this birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, "Are you really that old?" Because there were 21 candles on or 20 candles. And he just started crying. And
oh, no.
Now, if that doesn't show you how much these kids really think that you are the real character.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, because I know now the princesses have wigs on and everybody knows their wigs, they're not the real princess.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a person that's dressed up. When I worked there, the princess's hair was their own.
I can't, you know, I can't even imagine. Because, right, you've got to have, you have to hire based on, you know, personality and then also the looks. Because, right, we know what these characters look like because we've seen them in, you know, the movies countless times. So you can't just have, you know, just, you know, they have to look, you know, you have to make it believable. So the fact that you're finding someone that looks like, say, Alice, and she's got the right color hair and the correct length, like, I can't imagine what it was like for casting and trying to find
these
people.
This,
but
though,
how much more realistic?
Think about this, though, Teresa. Back in the 60s, Disneyland was the place to work.
That's true.
You know, like, they... you know, were a lot more glamorous, I guess. It was more prestigious to work there than I would say now.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
much so. Yeah. And, and you know, they were very strict about how people looked. And, you know, they couldn't wear excessive makeup. There were, of course, no tattoos. I think the goal was when people walked through the gates and came into Disneyland, the public wanted to see the quote unquote all American young people.
Sure, sure.
They wanted everybody to look like the epitome of what a young California, you know, just really look the image of what people thought Southern Californians should look like. So they were very strict about what people, what they did with their hair and their makeup and that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
I would like to go back to Disney. Like, if I could time travel, I would love to go back to Disneyland in the 50s and 60s because mm-hmm. people, when they would go to the parks, would dress up.
Yes.
Like, and even, like, I even think about this in other industries, right? Like, air travel, people would, like, wear their suits mm-hmm. and their dresses. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was an event.
People wear pajamas things. Now.
Yes.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, it's just, you know, going to Disneyland was, like, a big deal. People mm-hmm. wore their best, and, you know, they still went on the attractions and stuff, which I think people today, you know, I don't want to get my nice suit wet or whatever.
Right.
But what was that kind of like, working at Disneyland when people, like, thought it was more of an event than just a theme park?
I think it was great because, really, you know, you talk to people and they were just, you never heard any complaints from anybody. I mean, they were always very enthused to be there, and I hadn't really thought about the public and what they were wearing, you know, when they came into the park. But I think mostly they weren't as casual, of course, as they are today. But mm-hmm. I think it was pretty much men would have a button down, maybe plaid shirt on and slacks or something, and the women would. You know, they'd wear a sundress or something like that. I always felt sorry for the women who came in high heels.
Yes. I was just thinking that, too. I couldn't imagine with how much walking you do now, like when we go to the parks, trying to do that with heels. So
that's crazy.
Well, that's a lot.
As part of my wardrobe, I was issued what used to be called squaw boots. Just like the high-topped moccasins.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And I eventually had to ask them to buy me some supports for my feet because there's some support in them. And I had really high arches. So they did. I went to a podiatrist or somebody and they had custom-made arch supports because you're on that concrete or asphalt or whatever it is. It's really tough on your feet.
Oh, I can imagine.
I can't even. I mean, it's tough on your feet now when I've got my, you know, nice squishy tennis shoes. So I can't imagine just having little thin leather shoes that mm-hmm. I'm bouncing mm-hmm. around in. Yeah.
Right. You know, you were, I'm looking at a picture here of you with Captain Hook, and I think you were probably one of the lucky ones because it looked like the costume that you would have to wear would probably be pretty comfortable in the warmer months.
You bet.
Because, you know,
I still only work 40 minutes out of mm-hmm. every hour, but I wasn't hot. I remember ever being cold either.
That's good, because I'm looking at this picture, and you're next to Captain Hook in this picture. And Captain Hook, I'm guessing, would be very warm, because he had, like, a coat on and some pants.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
Of course, mm-hmm. had really long hair and a hat and everything.
Yeah.
It just feels like, you know, you're not getting the breeze.
No.
But yours looks really comfortable. You know, you've got a short sleeve kind of top. You've got, you know, some, like, leggings or mm-hmm. something on. But yeah, those things breathe. That's what you wear to the park.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Well, they were tights. They were lighter weight. So yes, I did have probably the coolest costume other than the mermaids, but
right.
they were stuck in the fin or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You could at least move around. They were just kind of, had to stay put. They didn't have very much space.
right.
That's so crazy. So what were, maybe, like, what other characters, or did you have any people that you bonded with that maybe you've stayed connected with through the years? We heard about the football players throwing you a party.
Actually, no. I was married at the end of my first year I worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back, and my husband had lifeguarded at Huntington Beach State Park and then lifeguarded in Long Beach. And we were both going to school at Cal. And they wanted me to come back, and I ended up working full time at Cal, and it wasn't feasible. Jim was going to pilot training, and our lives had changed completely. And so the two summers were all that I ever worked there. And but to have a whole family that's worked there
now—that's really cool.
I have two great grandsons, who one of them would be three next week and the other one is seven, and you know they've grown up in Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
My two granddaughters whose father worked there, they were in Disneyland very, very infrequently, although Heather, the oldest one, works there now and has since she was in high school, so obviously the Disney rubbed up on her.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, you're the one that kind of started this family, you know, maybe intentional or unintentionally started this tradition of your family working for Disney. So what is it like now? So, you know, you obviously were in the parks in the early 60s. So what has it been like visiting between, you know, the time that you worked there to present, you know, and seeing all the different changes and being able to share all of this with, you know, generation after generation with family? What's that been like?
Oh, I think it's really cool. They like to hear my stories,
yeah.
I think, or maybe they just patronize me. I have no idea.
Oh, I'm sure they enjoy it.
And we don't go to Disneyland very much because whenever we're in California, it's blackout.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been in enough times and we've been in California Adventure, which I really, really love. And I've been to Disney World, and Disneyland will always be in my heart, no matter what. I think that there's just something about Disneyland that is magical, where I did not get that feeling in Disney World.
Yes. Yeah, it is different. And I think part of the charm of Disneyland was the fact that it pushed the creativeness of the Imagineers and the people that, you know, are responsible for the space, because things like the stretching room at the Haunted Mansion wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for them having to try and we only have this little tiny space. We got to try and make this work. So, you know, we need an elevator. So then suddenly that became the stretching room. You know, we wouldn't have really cool things like that because, like, They Disney had to World, get they have it at, yeah. they have the stretching room, but it's not an elevator. It's just, you know, there for a show.
I like Disney World for different reasons than I do for Disneyland. In fact, we just spoke with Evan, who does graphic design for, or like, he works in graphic stuff for Disney, and he's based in Florida and does a lot of stuff for the Orlando parks, but he's done some stuff for Disneyland too. But he kind of explained that, you know, he's been to both resorts and thinks that, you know, Disney World, you know, kind of is you know, the grand kind of big, you know, place, and Disneyland is more of the
more, how did intimate.
He describe it? More intimate,
more
and stuff.
Intimate, more charming. Mm-hmm. The other nice thing too with Disneyland is with it being older, you have everything feels more like lived in. So your tree, you know, the trees are more mature and everything's kind of filled in more. So like Adventureland's just so cool with how much that like really does feel like a jungle.
Even
and, you know,
California Adventure though, like we're just waiting for things to mature. Cause it's, you know, it's been 20 years now, but you know, plants and stuff like that and trees take time, you know, decades. So yeah, I'm excited for what all of that stuff will look like when it's, you know, aged a little bit more. It's getting better. Even, you know, the Grizzly Peak area and stuff like that, over by the Grand Californian, all those things have grown. We saw Chippendale playing there.
Yes, we did.
You know, those things were not nearly as cool looking 20 years ago when it opened. So,
When you were in the parks as Peter Pan, so you said, what was it, the second year that Captain Hook and TikTok the Crocodile came out? Yeah. So did you get to do kind of little, like, how do I want to say this? Like playful things with them. Did you guys kind of play off each other in the parks, or did you just nope, that's my nemesis or whatever. I'm going to stick over here.
Well, actually, I really spent a lot of my time right by the tail of the crocodile.
That's
because the kids wanted to come and jump and ride on it. I mean, and every time he'd move, he'd have so. Kind of what was going on was I was trying to keep these kids off his, you know, I'm sure it would take him off balance. And it was, and I don't know whether they used it after that one year or not. I know they have a crocodile now, but his tail is really short.
And they have it like up against his back more so instead of on the ground.
Because I guess back then they didn't have the what do they call those cast members that kind of like
the handlers.
Handlers.
Yep.
Yeah, the handlers. I guess you were the Croc's handler back then.
Yeah, I think protector. Yes, we were not entertainers. I don't know how to say that. We were more atmosphere and there for the public to approach us and to talk to us and greet us. We didn't go and put on a little skit somewhere. Those people were an entirely different part of Disneyland, you know, in the parades. And I kind of, my email is Peter Pan Joan, and I show my picture with Walt. I have small ones and I show them to a lot of people, and particularly when I give them my email address and I'll tell them why that's my email. And then I'll say, I'm going to show you a picture so that you will remember me. Mm-hmm. And so service people and nurses and everything, they remember me because they've seen my picture with Walt Disney.
Yeah.
I don't show any of the other pictures. That's what the people are interested in, is the fact that they've got a picture with Walt Disney and a character that they know, that they've seen.
And this picture, again, we will be sure to share this with our listeners. It looks like it could have been a postcard or some sort of promotional. I mean, it's just, it's such a perfect and almost like in its own way iconic picture, because it's Walt, but then the fact that you've got all of the different characters riding and hanging their heads out of the monorail, like it's just, it's perfect.
The age of the cars.
Yes, and then the cars. Yes, exactly. The cars down below. Yeah, it's so neat. It's what a like special memory and like thing that you have of your time there. Because I feel like, you know, you've got the pictures of you in the park too, but this kind of like encapsulates like that time very well.
I have to say that I just love the expression on your face in this photo. You just look so happy.
You do.
Well, hey, I was happy. How many times do you get to sit next to Walt Disney. I mean, that's that really, and then to have it memorialized with a picture,
yeah,
which I always thought that they were, you know, they have postcards all over with the characters, and I always, they never did have one with me on it.
I don't know. I think this one could be a postcard.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, it's ancient.
But that's what makes it so cool. Like, you know, it's just a freeze frame in time of, you know, still the parks, but just the parks have, you know, the monorail doesn't go through a parking lot like it does in this picture. So, you know, it's just, it's really cool because it just has, it's a really great snapshot.
Yeah.
And plus, you can't hang your head out of a monorail now,
no.
you know, or put your arms out to wave. You know,
I'm
it's very cool.
Surprised and looking back on stuff like this, it's so interesting to me because, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast before that, you know, when Disneyland opened, Disneyland was not the Disneyland we know today. Like today's Disneyland is very polished and everything is, you know, perfect and everything kind of goes together. But Disneyland back in 1955 was not as glamorous as it is today. I mean, the experience and the whole concept was really awesome. And that's why people like to dress up and go. And it was an event and everything because there wasn't anything like it. But I think that people like myself, if I were to go back to, you know, the 1960 to meet you, that I would be surprised at how different Disneyland is. You know, certain things are the same. Main Street, you know, the buildings haven't changed. The castle really hasn't changed. But the fact that, like, the park itself is just so different. Again, stuff hadn't grown up. Mm-hmm. A lot of the attractions, especially, like, in Fantasyland and stuff, were a little more rudimentary than they are today. You know, it's just amazing. You know, the monorail track is still there, but the monorail itself was so different and everything you went around was so different that it feels like a completely different thing than what it is today. And it's so cool to talk with someone who was there when it was like this, and when Walt was still walking through the park, because that's another thing. It'd be amazing just to be there when, you know, it was Walt's Disneyland and not, you know, whatever corporate Walt Disney has turned Disneyland into now, which I'm not complaining. I still love Disneyland, but it's just a different thing than it was then.
Well, the attraction back earlier was Knott's Berry Farm. You know, and it was free, and they didn't have the rides or that kind of thing, but it was very popular, and, you know, everybody went to Knott's because it was free, and you went out there and they had dinner, a Sunday dinner or something. So Disneyland was really new, and I don't remember when Six Flags went up in Southern California on Magic Mountain. That was after Disneyland, but Disneyland was really a novelty, and when you see that what I made an hour and, you know, what it costs to go in there, and you were limited with those tickets because you only had so many e-tickets, which were the rides. The sweepers would just pick up, you know, the tickets that were left when people went. They didn't think they'd ever come back. I had stacks of A, B, C ticket books, you know, but you never found any with e-tickets.
Oh, I'm sure,
you know,
not.
It's kind of weird. I kind of wonder if, and I know people would not like this, but I kind of wonder if it would be a more interesting park now if we had ticket books. Because one of the things the ticket books did was, like, it kind of spread the crowds out between all the different things. Because, sure, you had, you know, however many e-tickets in there, but then once those were gone, you'd be like, okay, well, now I need to go to a D ticket or a C ticket.
Right.
And so nowadays it's like everybody, you know, like we have all these technological things, right? So we have like the virtual queues and the boarding groups and everything for these really popular new, you know, e-tickets. But you know, a lot of things. I was just watching yesterday, Avengers Campus opened, and one of the people that goes and films a lot of stuff, our friends over at Attractions 360, you know, they were like, we went on all the other attractions in California Adventure, and there was hardly any line because everybody was waiting to get into this new space.
Right.
Which is, you know, so I kind of wonder, you know, we keep talking about lately, we talked about annual passes going away, and everybody's all up in arms about that. Maybe we should have a lower entrance cost and bring back something like the tickets, where then, you know, the tickets pay for the attractions and the entrance cost pays for, you know, the general park upkeep. And then, you know, I don't know. It could make it more affordable because I think that a lot of people are feeling priced out now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, so. Even for us, you know, we don't go when we go out there because we'd have to pay to go in. And mm-hmm. We just don't want to spend that much money when we've been there. And of course, I'd love to see all the new Star Wars. I get pictures from my granddaughter with the great grandsons at the different, you know, things yeah. there. And of course, they love the stuffed characters.
So the people in your family that work there now can't get you signed in through the gate pass or anything?
Well, because when we go, it's usually Christmas time.
Oh, sure. Okay. Sure.
See, that's the thing. Otherwise, they could get us in with no problem. If we went over there, say, in August or something, when they don't have blackout dates. Because my granddaughter, she's worked there 21 years in management. So,
oh, wow.
She could definitely get us in when we wanted to go. And people always say to me, this is really strange. Oh, you have a lifetime pass, don't you? You can get in anytime. And I said, are you kidding? I have to pay to get in. No, they did that. And I don't know, how many characters do they have now?
Oh.
It depends.
Countless.
Well, I mean, for the 64th birthday?
So
they had like 64 characters.
Yeah, each cavalcade for each year. Yeah, they have that many characters.
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Yeah, it was
but
crazy.
I would say when you go to the parks just on an average day, I guess I would randomly guess in
a couple dozen maybe?
Yeah, per park, like maybe like 20 to 30, maybe. And I feel like that's probably a high count, but I'm going to include who you see in a parade and who you see
sure.
walking around. But then there's all these other characters that they bring out for like special events. So characters that you don't see very often. And actually right now they're bringing some of those characters out for the distance meet and greets. Like Clarabella, the cow or Clarabelle, the cow. You can see her now in, DCA, which she's someone that usually maybe you'd see in a parade every once in a while, but yeah. So it feels like there's a lot more characters now than there probably was.
And oh yeah. Well, my granddaughter last time we were in the park said, you have to see Jack Sparrow.
Oh yes. Yeah.
She said oh my gosh, he was the epitome. I mean, talk about a person matching up the character that people expect to see was really something that I don't know how long he's worked there.
Right.
Only had the one, but boy, was he good.
There was, who's the other one that always just is so amazing? Oh, Dr. Facilier, who, that's okay. So he's from The Princess and the Frog and he's the villain. And I think his role is kind of what yours was and is just more provides more ambiance because he just kind of wanders around New Orleans Square. And the other character that I think they is just incredible to see in person is Jack Skellington, who comes out for like Halloween. And I think he's there for Christmas, too. But his mannerisms, his movements. And I mean, he's older. That movie came out quite a while ago and he's just spot on. It's amazing to watch. And yes, I've seen the Jack Sparrows that are also just like, did you just step out of the movie?
Right.
Like, holy cow.
Right.
But then of course you get ones that are not great. Like I always point to by outside Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, they have the dude who plays Star-Lord never looks like the actor from the thing. And I'm always kind of sad because
I think it's hard.
Really, you couldn't find anybody who looked anywhere closer. But I am excited because one of the things with Avengers Campus that just opened is it sounds like they're starting to do more, like you were saying, where it's ambiance and atmosphere. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in Avengers Campus, they have, you know, all the different Avengers kind of wandering around and they're not doing like a lot of, and this could be, you know, COVID related, but at the same time, it sounds like that's what they planned from the beginning. And I hope that they bring that to the rest of the park because I love that characters, you know, those happenstance things where you feel like, oh, you know, we're in Fantasyland. Peter Pan's just, you know, walking around where he lives, you know, or whatever. And I like that. And I like that a lot better than like a stationary, you know, yes. go over by It's a Small World and you get to meet, you know, Peter Pan and Captain Hook.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I do think it's fun in Toontown how you can go visit people like Mickey and Minnie in their houses and, you know, walk through their.
But that's all ambiance right there because you're at their house.
Yep. I think so. I think so too.
It's not like just some cordoned off area, you know, like Winnie the Pooh and Tigger you always see by Splash Mountain.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
During the pandemic, since they've reopened Disneyland, they can't put the characters like me out there with masks on.
They don't. Yeah, so they have them pretty far away. So they have, like, so the character's here, and then they've got quite a bit of space, and then they have, like, a physical barrier in between the guests and where the character is. So who was it? Mulan was actually, like, on the castle lawn. So she was, at, like, inside of the fence between the fence and, like, the water. And so people could walk up to the fence and interact with her that way. And I think one of the princesses was there, too. So they kind of have them...
Well,
accessible, but you can't go up to them.
Yeah, and they sometimes have them like up on the train station and stuff, but they block off the stairs going up there.
Right.
When we were there for Touch of Disney, it was a little different. They were a little more distant at the time, but they had people like up on the building balconies and stuff like that. So it's really cool. I like and again with Avengers Campus, they have some characters that are face characters and. They do exactly what you were saying, is they just kind of put them behind a barrier that gives them that 6 feet of distance.
Because so control wants to see a princess with a mask.
Yeah.
Although I did see a guy at the store, or was it store? I don't remember where I was, but I walked by him and he had a mask on that he had printed with the bottom part of his face. And it looked like it was just his face. And I had to take a double take and I'm like, I love your mask. He's like, thank you. Because he got it print, like he must have taken a photo of himself and had that printed on the mask.
That's really wild.
That is crazy. I want to mention something real quick. You were talking about getting into the park. I'm surprised you haven't. I mean, I would be a jerk like this. I would take this photo and go to the gate and be like, don't you know who I am? I was the first Peter Pan. You should let me in.
And they would say, where did you get that photo?
Probably.
Take it away from me. So I don't think so. We will be out in Disneyland, not in Disneyland, but in Southern California for Christmas this year. And we usually go, you know, on the main street.
Yeah.
You know, you can go there free and all, but getting into the park itself. No, when the 60th anniversary of when I started at Disneyland, and it was my husband and my 50th anniversary, our son arranged for a VIP day for us. California Adventure and Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into Walt's apartment, well, both of them, but the old apartment, and this is the honest truth, I never knew where it was until they took us there, and that was 50 years later.
Wow.
I just didn't know where this apartment was.
Well,
and then we went in the new apartment and sat on the balcony and watched Fantasmic.
Oh, wow.
Which, oh gosh, Fantasmic, just, I have the record and play the music. And that's super special.
That show is, it's perfect. It's amazing and it's perfect. And they have it at Walt Disney World. I don't know if you've seen it there, but it's not the same. It's much more magical at Disneyland because you take an area of the park that it looks normal and just, you know, it just is during the day. And then it becomes this incredible,
that's part of what makes it so cool,
stage, and this big dragon comes out from nowhere. And then the water's
and
on
the
fire.
It's
incredible. You know, I was thinking about that because when we were talking about how, you know, of course you worked at the park when Walt was at the park and he wasn't there all the time. She worked there when, like, the lamp actually signaled for real when he was there or not. So, right, we've got in his apartment, there's the lamp that's on the table.
It
used to be that lamp would be off. And, you know, we've never, you know, it's been on for however many years now, but you actually were in the park probably more often with the light being turned off, because he probably just didn't visit as often. Cause like you said, it was mostly, you know, outside of park hours that he'd be there. So that's, Yeah, so that I could see why you maybe wouldn't have known exactly where the apartment was, because that the iconic lamp was just a lamp at that point.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. But the new apartment that they built, mm-hmm. which she never did live in, that one is just fantastic.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes.
I really missed that it was the gallery. It used to be the Disney gallery, and everybody could go up to it. And now it's the Dream Suite, so you have to have like special. You have to be special to go up there.
Yes.
Well, so. It was given to me as a gift by my daughter and her husband. I have an original painting of this long and this wide, done by the artist who did the mural in the Peter Pan ride, and it is that it's not a copy of it. He actually painted the mural on this, and they bought it for me for Christmas one year. So that's really, really, you're saying the gallery, yes. Mm-hmm. It had wonderful things in it.
Wow. You know, I think it's so special and so cool that, you know, you got to be Peter Pan for 2 years, and you've carried this with you throughout your whole life, and like it's such a, you know, it sounds like it was such a magical and very special time in your life. So I think it's so cool that you've like embraced it, because Peter Pan, I mean, what a fun character. First of all, he's just so like fun and mischievous and like carefree, you know. But yeah, I think it's great.
And to be the first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the second summer after my husband and I were married, it was a magical summer. I would go to the beach where he was lifeguarding in the morning and go to work at be there at 3:30. And then on Friday or Saturday night, he'd come out and we'd spend the rest, after I got off work, we'd spend the rest of the evening, you know, in the park. So
what a perfect summer. You spend the morning at the beach, the afternoon in Disneyland, and then you have your date night on the weekend at Disneyland too.
It was a summer that I, you know, we'll never forget.
Yeah.
Well, your enthusiasm for the park really comes through. And I think that probably makes this one you really want to listen to. I've gone back and I listened, started at one and go through. I have two really big hobbies. And one is sewing. I make pillows, heart pillows for patients.
Surgical
patients at the hospital. And then, I'm really a crafter. I make greeting cards for everyone in my church for their birthday and their anniversaries.
Wow.
So I listen to podcasts while I'm doing this, because the podcasts you listen to, so you can be doing other things. So I really have gotten into it, and I've listened to some of the other, you know, Disney, but I'm not really interested in Disney World or hearing about it.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of Disney World podcasts for sure. There's only a few Disneyland ones, and I think that none quite do exactly what we do, so it kind of works out. Mm-hmm. All right, well, then let's get to our last question. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about?
I don't think so. Your last question was, if I could go back, what would I want to do? I would want to be a tour guide. That
the original.
That's what I always wanted to do, because first of all, they just wearing Pendleton. I don't know whether they wear Pendleton skirts anymore, the plaid wool and the white blouses, but to me that was just elegant. And they get to go everywhere, and they do meet, and they meet people, very interesting people from all over the world, and celebrities. And I was in the park one day and I saw a tour guide with some people, so I knew they were maybe somebody that I would recognize. It was Tom Hanks and his family.
Oh, wow.
And it was very interesting. I don't think I knew it was somebody important because there was a tour guide with them. Mm-hmm. But most people in the park don't know that. You know, the guests don't know that. And he had a baseball cap pulled down and jeans and a t-shirt on. And we kind of followed him at a distance, you know, but I think it was a birthday party for one of his kids or something, and they'd come out to Disneyland.
That's pretty incredible, especially with, you know, some of the very iconic roles that he's had,
like
Walt Disney. Have you watched that movie?
I, you know,
Saving Mr. Banks
came out and everything. And I don't think I ever watched it for some reason.
I think you should, because there is a part in it where they visit. Right, yeah, they visit Disneyland, and it's, you know, they kind of take, you know, current Disneyland, and they tried to make it, you know, try to make it look like it was back from, well, the late 50s, early 60s. So I think that would be really special for you to take a look at that. Because I even think they brought out some of the old costumes. And so they have the characters out in the correct style of costumes for that time and all that. Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's a story about Walt trying to convince P.L. Travers, who is the author of Mary Poppins, and it's him trying to convince her to trust him with the story of Mary Poppins. And it's also the like kind of how they wrote the movie and did the movie and all that. So it's actually, it's really fun. They've got two guys in there that portray the Sherman brothers. And so they're, it's really
a great movie. Mm-hmm. I was worried that Tom Hanks wouldn't do.
I was a little worried about that too.
Walt Disney very well, but he did Walt Disney pretty well. And now I want to see, I still haven't seen it. I want to see the one where he was Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So he's portrayed two very beloved icons.
Yeah, very iconic people.
So.
Right.
Well, I guess that does it. So thank you so much, Joan, for reaching out to us and telling us about your story, the photos and stuff that you've shared with us. And of course, you sent us that nice letter. Mm-hmm. Was just wonderful. So
I would say it was magical.
It was magical. If it was straight out of Neverland.
Yes.
if anybody is out there and worked in the park or anything like that, you can do like Joan did. You can send us a physical piece of mail to our PO box.
That was the most special part about it, was that it was a physical letter.
Yeah, it was great.
I sent the photos because there was a guy that had on Facebook or something. If you went in and Googled first Peter Pan at Disneyland, he claimed he was the first Peter Pan.
Oh.
And all these pictures on there and everything. And I went on there and I thought, buddy, I was just
excuse me, that was me.
So by sending you that picture with me with Walt Disney, mm-hmm. then I knew that I had credibility with you, that you knew that I was actually the first, you know, not just somebody says he is.
right.
I tell you, I'm not joking. I about fell off my stool when we were reading and then got to the photos. We're like, holy cow, this was completely unexpected. It was just wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I have another podcast, the Disney podcast, that I don't know whether you listen to, but it's called Four Score.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
The number four and mm-hmm. then score. And they interview, the interviewee interviews the people who've written the scores for Disney movies and the parks and for everything. So I love it. It's just been wonderful.
What a neat angle to talk, you know, that's a really cool Wow, that's really neat.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out.
You would enjoy it. And the last one I listened to was the young lady who did the music score for the whales on the National Geographic
series. Wow,
And the person who does the interviews is extremely knowledgeable and really pulls, you know, good things out of the people. And I've just really, because I love Disney music. That's like I told you, that music at the beginning of your podcast really has a hook.
Yes, it does.
Now, I hate to tell you this, but we actually, because that was fantastic music, we actually are transitioning off of that. We're trying not to get in trouble with Disney. we're trying to get rid of their copyrighted material, because when we've been posting on YouTube, we get flagged for it. So we are trying to...
Which is breaking our hearts, because we love it so much, too. So we're trying to find something comparable, which feels impossible.
Yeah. So we're trying to... We've got a voice actor who's going to do a new intro thing for us, I think. And then we've also got, we're trying to get some score picked out and figured out. So that should be coming soon.
Well, I am Get Out of My Head, When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah.
Played right that's another the castle.
Yes.
Over and over and over.
That's another one that's just pulls at your heartstrings, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
We have not said goodbye to her for the podcast. Oh. No, we got all off topic.
Never. We never get off topic. I don't know what you're talking about.
So thank you, Joan, so much for spending this afternoon.
Yes.
I don't know what time zone you're. I guess you're in an earlier time zone than we are. This morning with us. It was lovely hearing about your stories of being Peter Pan in the park and some of the stuff from the 1960-1961 year. And thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
Well, you had a rocky start, but then you came out strong near the end. Well done for you tonight.
There's hope.
Yeah. So your first question that was submitted by listener Matthew J., for most of its history, Disneyland Park has had a rocket spinner attraction. By what four names has this style attraction been known?
Oh! Dumbo. The flying elephant. Huh?
No, that's not a rocket spinner. So.
I just heard like style attraction. Oh. I'm like, oh my gosh, were we overthinking
this? No.
Rocket spinner specifically. Okay. Phew. So what we were looking for, well, your answers were the rocket jets and the Astro Orbiter. What we were looking for was the Astro Jets from 1956, the Tomorrowland Jets from 1964, the Rocket Jets from 1967, and the Astro Orbiter from 1998.
So, I know the last two because I've ridden the last two.
Yeah, and the Tomorrowland Jets, definitely.
So you are awarded 2 points for those.
As soon as he said them, I'm like, yep.
Your second question, submitted by listener Chris M. What's the name of the highest hill you traveled over on the Skyway Buckets? Hint, it's where Matterhorn is today. You both got that right with Holiday Hill.
They had to put something there because all the teenagers kept going up there and making out.
I know, it was funny because when he first asked the question, I was thinking like, Lover's Lane. I'm like, no, that wasn't actually what it was called, but that's what it made me think of.
But that's what people, I think, referred it as.
And our third regular round question, what three characters could you meet at the Star Wars Launch Bay?
Gosh.
Now, this one...
We listed all of the stars. Well,
and see, this one, when it was originally written as a question, was back when we first started doing trivia, and it was before we had the listener-submitted questions. And so before I considered it as a askable question, I did research and double-checked what the correct answer would be. And instead of the original three answers that we would have accepted, I doubled it up to six acceptable answers based on...
We have hope.
...things, or based on new things that are now characters you can meet at Star Wars Launch Bay. So really, I should have said, what six characters could you meet at Star Wars Launch Bay? Sure. But I wanted to stay true to the original question. So, at the origin, when we first wrote the question, the answers that we were looking for, and Tag got correct with Boba Fett, Darth Vader, and Chewbacca.
Woo!
And since then, in further research, I have found that you could also meet BB-8, Chewie, and Kylo Ren.
Yeah, because they had a little BB-8, but for some reason I thought that was just in Florida, but I don't remember. But that's why I didn't say BB-8, because I thought it was just a Florida thing.
And your fourth and final regular round question, submitted by listener Lee S., why is the Carnation Cafe often identified as Walt Disney's favorite restaurant, and why is it impossible for that to be true? The answer given by Lee S. and expanded upon by Tag... Because of the Walt's favorites items on the menu, such as his chili, and then also because it's on Main Street, and Walt was regularly on Main Street, and it couldn't possibly be Walt's favorite restaurant. It didn't open until 1997, long after
97.
Walt was no longer with us.
I didn't realize it was that recent.
And I award you full credit for getting all of the answers correct on that question.
Yay!
And for your bonus question for the night, Adventureland was not the originally intended name of the land. What was the originally intended name as they were developing it? Tag got the full credit on that with the True Life Adventure Land.
Really?
And Teresa missed it by the addition of the word land.
You should have known when he was like, no land.
Yeah, I suppose.
He tried to save you.
I Peter Sagal'd you there and you didn't catch it.
Peter Sagal.
Tag got what I was saying there.
Yeah, because when they do those, when they do the trivia.
Wait, don't tell me when he's always like, you sure you meant to say B? You didn't see the other answer there?
Right.
Well, listeners, how do you think Tag and Teresa did today? How did you do listening at home? Did you get all of the right answers? Do you think that you've got the awesome trivia questions that'll be able to stump them on an upcoming podcast? If you think you've got the perfect questions for them, feel free to send those in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.